You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is made possible by the support of our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello, you're listening to the Mythcreant Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me is...
Oren.
And a returning guest host...
Sarah, hello.
All right, welcome back, Sarah. So guys, today we are talking about tracking turns in role-playing games. And I imagine we'll probably be talking quite a lot about combat with this, because when else do you take turns in really annoying, tedious ways?
Excuse me, I don't feel like I have had enough screen time on this podcast, Wes. I would like to request more.
Wait, hold on, please. Hold on, I have something to say.
What?
No, it's not your turn yet. Yeah. So, I mean, should we talk about non-combat turns first? I know that like this definitely is an issue. We're probably gonna have plenty to say with combat, but just I'm not sure how you guys handle it, but just general turn order outside of combat for role-playing games, I kind of wing it. Based on like a feeling of has everybody had like equal talking time, and that's about as structured as I get.
Well, I mean, that's a good metric. I prefer to use a kind of bidding system where everyone can put money down in front of them, and whoever puts down the most money will like get the most screen time. That's sort of how I do it.
Hey, GM's gotta eat.
Yeah, I know, right? GM ain't free. Well, I gotta supply those dice. What I like to do is when in doubt, I try to give everyone like an equal amount of time. So unless there is a compelling reason not to, I try to go around the circle at least once before anyone gets to go again. And that doesn't mean I have to literally go, okay, the person on my left and then the person on their left, etc. But like, you know, if there are five of us and player one goes first, I try to make sure everyone else has also gotten a chance to do something before player one goes again.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And like, this is, ironically, it's actually easier for me if the party has split up, because if they're in more than one place, that gives me an excuse to be like, okay, we're cutting away from the two of you over to the two of them who are in a different part of the mines of Moria or whatever, right? Whereas if everyone's together in one place and you have some players who are just like, naturally more active than others, it's harder to find reasons to focus on the less active ones. Like, you should still do it, but you don't have the built-in, like, okay, now we need to cut away to the other half of the group, right?
Right, yeah.
Definitely. I think I've been playing Primetime Adventures for so long that I'm so used to that system, which is basically, you know, everyone is... Usually there's only two or three characters in a scene, and that makes it really easy to make sure, oh, so-and-so hasn't played in a while, let's make sure they have a scene.
Yeah, Primetime Adventures, like, having the assumption that the characters are not always physically in proximity to each other, in a way, kind of makes that easier. But it's also risky if the party is split up and you aren't, like, on top of your time management skills, and you end up giving, like, one group just, like, too long, and the other group is just kind of like, it's been a while since we've gotten to do anything, I'm gonna, like... I don't know, go order a pizza or something. And, you know, that the like interest starts to wane, right?
Yeah.
Especially now that smartphones exist and I have to compete with like the entire internet for attention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Rick, it's your turn. What? What's happening?
It's like, hang on, I have some angry birds to throw. Yeah. I'll get back to you.
I feel like it's probably a good policy to have no like smartphone access at the table.
I've tried that a couple of times and I've just sort of discovered it's not worth it. Just like trying to get people to give up their smartphones is like it's hard, right? It's like what is this, high school?
Put your phones in the box. I'll return them to you at the end of the adventure.
And to be fair, like, some people, having a smartphone is actually not distracting. It's actually important for them because they, like, you know, have a lot of energy and they need something to do with it.
That's a good point.
And they'll actually get, and they'll get more distracted if they don't have something to do. The problem is that, like, you can't tell the difference between those people just by looking at them.
Mm-mm, nope.
You know? Like, there's some people, if you give them a smartphone, they will just disappear into it, and other people, they will be like, yes, I am paying attention and, like, doing something with my hand while we're playing, right?
Yeah, I guess you have to know your players and also keep an eye out for, if you know the people, what do they look like when they're bored versus when they're engaged and using, you know, a smartphone or knitting or drawing or something to, like, take care of that extra energy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
So, like, in general, I would say that when I'm managing, like, people's turns outside of combat, you know, I just try to be, like, every, like, go around and be like, hey, what are you doing during all this, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, occasionally I have to be like, all right, well, there's just no logical way that this scene concerns you, so I'll just make a note to give you some extra time later.
Yeah, that sounds...
But I think that's best practice, you know? I have seen some other systems that have tried to, like, strictly structure... like turns outside of combat, and they very rarely work. Like Burning Empires had this where it was like you have a certain number of scenes that each group is allowed to have, and like they have to decide when they want to use them, and if they're out of that kind of scene, like, too bad. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but my story, bro. Like, I have a story to tell, and my story doesn't care that I've used up my arbitrary number of scenes where I can roll for something. You know, so like that sort of thing was like just not wasn't jiving.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started on Legend of the Elements. That's another problem.
People, as it turns out, are relatively good at figuring out how to have a conversation and take turns without formal rules.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, like, there are a few that work okay. Like, I actually am a big fan of the Mouse Guard turn management system, because it's pretty like broad. And then like Torchbearer with some house ruling, I think, works very well for the very specific type of adventure it's trying to create. I wouldn't recommend it for anything else, but like specifically for the like running around in a dungeon while your torch burns down, it's pretty useful for that.
Yeah, and I've seen like story games that use that for very specific effect. Can't think of anything off the top of my head except for Durance, which each turn is basically a small scene that starts with a question. And then each person takes a turn asking a question, and then the scene plays out. So that makes sure that everyone participates a little bit, but is less, the structure is a little bit broader than, you know, you talk now, no, you talk now.
All right, so we talked about not combat for a while. Shall we deal with the combative elephant in the room? How should we handle turns in combat? How do we do it? Do we just do the standard, you know, everyone rolls initiative and then we like, you know, work our way down until everyone has gone and then we start again? Or is there a better way?
I always liked, I always heard it first as draw sword, roll initiative. But really it's the other way around, right? Like,
yeah.
So I would like to use that as like a larger metaphor for how I think we should be doing this. It's like, forget the roll, draw your sword, and attack stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, that's my primary experience is with initiative for turn order. And, like, jump in, interrupt me. But I just think that the problems with that is it encourages static play, turn optimization, and then too many problems for the GM. And I guess what I mean by, like, static play, right, is that each player suddenly is isolated within their own turn. And they can't act until it's their turn, which is something more on that like later. And then because they can't act until it's their turn, they either zone out or they spend all the not their turn planning the most ultimate and optimized turn for when it comes, right? And like I see this, that like my players really want somehow on their turn to have the most effective turn, right? Like, for whatever they do, they want it to be super effective and end the combat, you know? And that is, especially for, like, Dungeons & Dragons, very unrealistic. And then, yeah, and the potential to make my head explode. Like, I find that the less creatures and PCs involved in the combat, the better, which is kind of too bad because there's, like, great summoning spells that I would love to, like, use, but those are a headache for tracking, you know? Like,
right. Which, like, kind of creates another problem where it's, like, the more characters you add to a conflict or to a combat, like, the longer everything takes, right?
Yeah.
And it's... So, like, the GM has a lot of pressure to reduce the number of, like, enemies to make combat more manageable. But when you do that, you run into some problems where it's like, okay, so you have a big nemesis, right? Like, this PC has a nemesis. And that nemesis should be, like, about equal to that PC, probably a little stronger, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of how the nemesis rules work. But then, like, your options are to either let the party just, like, mob the nemesis and then it's not a hard fight, or to say no, the rest of you don't get to participate in this fight and this is just between the one character and their nemesis, or to like give the nemesis a bunch of buddies, at which point now the combat takes forever.
Yeah, you know, it's like you're playing and you're having a great time and then you look at the clock and you're like, oh man, we got like maybe an hour left. I hope this one combat can finish by then.
Like, I feel like it's not always like, I've definitely been in combats that it was not even having a great time. It was like trying to break down a wall with a spoon. It's like, oh, I did like maximum damage. It's awesome. Oh, great. He looks slightly more damaged. Great. Oh, this is going to take another hour, isn't it?
Maximum spoon damage.
all of your spoons have been very badly damaged is a problem. Yeah, and like honestly, like every system that I've seen that tries to shake up the D&D model has invariably just made it more complicated. Like, you know, some of them are like, you can re-roll initiative every turn to keep things interesting. And it's like, I mean, that does change the order everyone goes in each turn. But other than, like, making me write down a new initiative chart, it's like, how does that really change what anyone's doing?
Yeah, that's... Right? And even, like, even Wizards of the Coast themselves have, like, put out that option. And they don't even really endorse it that much, which I find hilarious.
Yeah, well, there was a, there's, like, one of Fifth Ed's, like, designers was on Twitter talking about his, like, alternate initiative
system. That was recently, right?
That...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty recently. And he was like, okay, so what I do is, I have everyone, like, declare what kind of action they're using, and then, like, I assign that action a die type for initiative, so that, like, different actions move at different speeds. And it's like, and he was, like, talking about how it, like, this, like, encourages people to, like, think about what they're doing and not just do the same thing every time. And I'm like, does it though? Because if your character is built for spell shooting, even if spell shooting is slower than anything else, you're still like, you're not going to do anything else well, right? So you're just always going to be spell shooting. Yeah. And so now there's just an extra variable I need to keep track of.
That sounds like a pain to run.
It does. And then it makes me wonder, like, you know, is he running this adventure like with all the computers, like no actual dice, right? It's all just computer buttons, like roll a dice here, roll a dice there, and then it like gets broadcast to everybody else in their computers and
smartphones. That's and a good reason to look at smartphones.
Yeah, when exactly.
Game like, is run on the smartphone.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I'm not convinced that having everything run electronically would have, like, because you still have to manually input it, right? I mean, even if the computer is actually rolling the dice for you, I don't think that would actually make too much of a difference. Although my friend did make a system that had an initiative type system that would have just made way more sense in a video game. So this is how it worked. Everyone had a certain number of action points, right? And you're like, the number of action points you had was like a derivative of some of your stats, and different like actions like cost different amounts of action points. And so whoever had the most action points would go first. They would take an action which would reduce their action points. So let's say you and me and Sarah are all in a combat. Sarah has 8 action points, you have 7 action points, and I have 6 action points. Sarah takes the action, like, big axe swing.
Yes, my favorite
which
action.
Which takes 3 action points. So Sarah is now down to 5, which means it is now your turn because you have 7.
Okay.
And then you would go and, like, you know, you do something that only takes, like, 2 action points, that would take you down to 5, and then it would be my turn, because I'm at 6, and then, like, you know, you and Sarah would be tied. And so, like, it goes around like that. And it was like, this might work as a video game with a computer to keep track of everything. But, like, as a pencil and paper game, it was just, like, it was just too much to keep track of.
I kind of like the meatiness of the mechanics. But, you know, unless you had, like, maybe if you had little counters or something to keep track of it that you're using as a currency.
Yeah, I mean, we tried beads, we tried like those little magic life trackers that they have. You know, we tried a bunch of different ways to keep track of it, and it was like, you know, it's better if you have those, but it's still just like it's just takes too much time to check. Okay, like whose turn is it now? Like who has the most action points?
Would you like get your action points replenished at any?
Yeah, once everyone uses up their action points, everyone gets them replenished.
Oh, okay, so like a whole turn basically lasted the length of the total like action point pool. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
And like I could totally see why he thought about it this way, because like to his credit, it did promote some actual like tactical thinking. And like, you know, it made each turn feel like it mattered. Like each turn felt like a big deal, as opposed to in a lot of D&D systems where it's like, oh, it's just one turn, it's one action, you know, whatever. It's like the wall with a spoon problem, mm-hmm. right? Like it felt like when during a turn we were actually getting something done. So like I understand why he did it. It was just like there's a very low ceiling of at what point you have too much complexity in a system for pencil and paper games, right?
Yeah. I always feel like I've been ruined for how long rounds and turns and stuff take, because I so enjoyed Baldur's Gate and all the other ones on that engine, which, you know, mm-hmm. they say that they're running on, you know, D&D rules and stuff, but, you know, somehow it's more exciting watching Minsk run around with Boo and swing his big sword. Even when he misses, I'm still like enjoying that like little bit of wait time. But like mm-hmm. in reality, when like my turn comes up and I miss, I'm just like, well, that was a waste, right? You know?
Well, I mean, in Baldur's Gate, I mean, first, it doesn't take very long because a computer handles all of that background stuff. But like, even I think more importantly in Baldur's Gate and other games like that, you are controlling the entire party. So there's like a tactics element to it that you don't get with only one character, because like your one character is probably only ever going to do the one thing, right? That's like, you built your character to shoot arrows, you're gonna shoot arrows. It's like, you're not gonna decide, oh, well, I guess this round I'll draw my scimitar and start fighting somebody, right? You ain't Legolas.
Another complaint that I do have with the kind of the static waitingness of it is the more like you're waiting around to do something, like I would make a claim that that is pulling you out of character. You know, if you're really trying to encourage like role playing, then like every time you have like a window for your turn to like dive back in and role play your actions and then dive back out. You know, like if it's more fluid, if it can be more storytelling driven, I think you can encourage opportunities, as long as your players are into it, right? To try to not only speed things up, but make it like better for role playing your characters.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Have any of you played any system? Because we've been grousing a lot about the problems with various systems of initiative and turn tracking. Have any of you played a system that you thought did it particularly well?
So there is a system that I have used very briefly, but I really like the mechanics of it. Okay, so it's developed by Fred Hicks of Evil Hat Productions for, I think it's the Marvel role-playing game. But the idea, it's Marvel's action order system. And you can totally use it in any role-playing game that has turns. Basically, the person whose turn it is decides who gets to go next. And the only thing you're keeping track of is who hasn't gone yet in the round. And then the next round, like the last person in the first round picks the first person in the next round. And yeah, so you can choose another player, you can choose to hand it off to the villain, because, you know, like making sure that players can have time to like react is important as well. And it creates this, you know, it's obviously really easy. You don't have to keep track of anything. You don't even have to keep track of initiative. But at least in the article where Fred Hicks explains this, called Accidentally Designing Marvel's action order system. He definitely makes a lot of points about how this makes it more dynamic and more exciting and more tactical. So yeah, it's definitely something to check out.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds very interesting.
Wes, what about you? Have you played a system that you thought had actually had a decent turn tracking system?
Well, you know, it was funny. I've talked about Kenneth Hite's Trail of Cthulhu on here before, and when I was mm-hmm. writing up some notes for this show, I had to text my friend John, because I couldn't for the life of me remember if there was anything in that book about tracking turns or doing anything in combat. And we just recalled that, no, there's nothing in there about that, which I think is great. if it doesn't provide me with a strict set of rules for how, like, turns should be conveyed, then we can just go forth and operate on a system that makes sense according to our characters, which more often than not has been, like, you know, if a character has got a relatively high athletic score, you know, generally we could say maybe that they're faster, but we generally just kind of, like, have it be player driven. And when it gets down to the grittiness of needing to, like, take turns, since that game's kind of built on cosmic horror, it doesn't happen very frequently, so it doesn't feel like it drags anything down.
Yeah, but how will you know how often to roll the D3 for how many investigators Cthulhu eats? Like, it can't just be it devours a D3 of adventurers or investigators. It has to be per something.
I guess maybe what is nice about that, which was kind of the issue we talked about earlier, is there's very often only, like, one or two bad guys, like, to deal with. So, like, the combat goes fast. And, you know, they're horrifying monsters, so the investigators either flee, or it kills them, or they die pretty quickly, and then it's over. So, keeps up pace, for lack of anything better.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point about whether or not a system even needs rules for tracking turns. And I would like to compare two similar systems that both tried to go without them, and one succeeded and I think one failed. So I would compare Legend of the Elements and Dungeon World. Neither of these games, these are both powered by the Apocalypse, so they're both based off the Apocalypse World engine. And neither of them has, like, an initiative system, right? Like, there's no... You don't have any kind of separate rules for combat. It's just like, you know, combat uses the same rules as anything else. And in Legend of the Elements, it works because in Legend of the Elements, a combat role is the same as any other role. You just describe your character fighting and you set stakes and they go one way or the other, right? That they're, you know, your character can, like, there's, like, a special stake as a result of combat where, like, your character can get, like, a negative trait put on them. But it's pretty, otherwise it's all pretty much the same.
So the entire combat is one turn, basically?
Yeah, it's like one, yeah, it's all one roll. It's like, or at least, like, the dramatically interesting part is one roll. So it's like, if you have a combat where there's, like, more than one dramatically interesting beat in it, it's possible that could take multiple rolls. But that would be the same as any other scene with more than one dramatically interesting situation. And I think that works just fine. But then you have Dungeon World, on the other hand, which does the same thing, except everyone has hit points. And it gets really weird, because it's like, okay, like, the standard outcome of a combat, of a fight roll, is that your opponent loses a certain amount of hit points. And it's like, okay, I describe myself fighting them, and, like, I roll and I succeed, and I deal them some damage, but that's it. Like, they don't take any penalties from that damage. Nothing actually changed in the fiction. They just took some damage. And it's like, now what happens, right? So do I just roll that, like, again until they run out of hit points? And if so, how often do I get to do that before somebody else gets to do something? And that's when it starts to feel weird that the game doesn't have any kind of turn system. Just because they included hit points in there, because it's, like, you know, supposed to be it's supposed to be a callback to the way old D&D worked.
It seems like they're mixing their metaphors there, because
yeah.
Apocalypse World is usually pretty, more story-oriented, more narrative-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So throwing hit points in there without any of the other crunch seems like it would be really hard to run a game that way.
That is an accurate depiction of the problems with Dungeon World, yes. where it's Dungeon World, it's like your weapon has 5-foot reach. It's like, well, what does that do? I don't know. It just has it.
I have friends that love Dungeon World, but I you know, I haven't actually played it yet, so maybe I'll have to give it a shot.
Dungeon World's very popular, and I may very well be wrong. You can go to the comments section of my Dungeon World review, and you can find all the people who are very excited to tell me that I'm wrong. So I might be. I can only comment on Dungeon World as I have run it and seen it run.
I imagine it depends a lot on the players and how much they like having those extra color there, even if they're not as mechanically grounded as they are in something like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you can make anything fun with if your group is enthusiastic enough, right? So I'm certainly not saying you can't have fun playing Dungeon World. I do have one example of a game that just uses, like, standard everyone gets to go once, and then go again. But that despite that, works really well. And it's Anima Prime, which I've talked about before, that it just has, like, a really fun combat system. It's, like, one of the only games I can honestly say that of. And I think what really helps is that you don't have this whole, like, all right, I roll to hit it with my axe, and I either miss, and then that's a big disappointment because I missed, or I hit and do, like, some damage that, like, mechanically is just, like, reducing their health ticker, right? Instead, it's, like, you spend, like, several rounds, you know, doing, like, setup maneuvers and, like, charging your laser, basically. And then when you finally get your attack, it, like, feels really meaty. Like, you take a big handful of dice and you, like, just throw them down. And it's, like, yeah, look at all those wounds I inflicted. Like, that is a serious thing I just did.
It definitely sounds like an anime where everyone powers up for just cutting back and forth between the characters powering up before anyone does anything.
Yeah, I mean, ideally it's more like how in Avatar where you'll have like the first fight between Zuko and Aang where they like spend the first couple of rounds like, you know, sort of probing each other's defenses and being like, what are you all about? Like, what happens if I shoot some air at you, and then like what happens if I like, you know, make a, you know, a chop for your head? And then they get serious once they've like sort of figured each other out.
Ooh, that sounds way more interesting.
That's like, I mean, mechanically it's identical, but I would say that it works, that's what you really want it to be. Like, you could also just do it DBZ style and have it be like, all right, I roll for my maneuver, and my maneuver is to stand here going until it's over 9,000, right? either of those are options, but obviously the Avatar one is more interesting. And since we're almost out, one other system that I think is I enjoy, even though I recognize it is like too complicated for most people, is first edition 7th Sea, which was really unbalanced, but I still enjoyed it. You had a number of actions each turn equal to your panache stat. And you're like, your panache stat, so that made panache like way too powerful, right? Because it like determined how many times you can act each turn. But regardless, like that aside, like what you would do is you would like take a number of d10s like equal to the number of actions you had and roll them, and then like the GM would go down from like 10 to 1, and like you would act on each time. You know, it's like, so if I rolled like 4 d10s and I had a 7, a 6, a 5, and a 1, I would act once on each of those turns. And it like allowed for some interesting setup stuff. Like there were some cool like fencing maneuvers you could do where it was like, okay, so on my first action I'm going to do a feint, and then on my second action I'm going to do a pommel strike, and that'll leave him like disoriented and confused, and then on my third action I'll like go in for the lunge. And like as a fencer it like felt very organic. It, like, I enjoyed that. But at the same time, it's like, wait, how many actions do I have, and on what turn do I go?
Isn't this the role-playing game that got, like, an award for being an accurate representation of fencing?
7C did get an award. I don't know if that's what it was an award for, but I think it just won Best Game the year it came out.
Just the best game.
I think so. I don't know. I'll look into it. I'll put that in the show notes. What did 7C win an award for? Who knows? Maybe it was for inspiring the most people to talk like pirates. Yar. Okay, well, so we are out of time. Thank you both for listening to me rant on that.
A pleasure.
As always.
Thank you again, Sarah, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgrants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
Spend your next free evening trapped on a ship with a supernatural menace, trying to recover your lost memories. And bring your friends. It's all in our standalone RPG, The Voyage, for sale on mythgreens.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail.
princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.